Hi, welcome to That's My Purse Pod, the podcast all about King of the Hill. I'm Jason.
And I'm Jimmy.
So how was your weekend, your past week? The magic question I ask all the time.
Well, I just went to my first comic book convention, or a little, like, con of the year. There was this small one in New Braunfels. It was called Retromania. A lot of vintage toys and things like that. The main reason I went was, I always forget what I've said on this podcast and what we talked about personally, because we talk a little bit before we record. So, and we talk during the week, so it's really hard trying to remember. But I'm a big Power Ranger fan. I love all the seasons, some more than others, but a few of the Power Rangers from the In Space season were here, and I thought it'd be cool to meet some of them. And New Braunfels isn't too far from where I live, so I was like, it'll be a fun day trip.
From Austin, it's, gosh, not even an hour, so it's a pretty quick, it is a good day trip, New Braunfels. I've done that a few times in my past, and I would always recommend it. You know, it's not the greatest city you're ever going to visit, but it's definitely a nice little small fun one.
Yeah, it was really great. I kind of, I got a few things from my collection. I got a couple autographs, which I really enjoyed. So, overall, I think it was a fun weekend, you know, kept me busy.
So on the last podcast, I believe we were talking about how there's a major one in Japan or something that you were looking for us, in, as with regards to, Power Rangers.
So for Power Rangers, if you watch an episode, when they fight in the suits, usually it's not American footage. It's Japanese footage from a show that they call Super Sentai, which I really have been getting into this past few years. But they're going to have their first like Super Sentai convention in Japan this year. And I would love to go, but man, that is like a... Oh, I don't know. That's a very expensive trip. I mean, first, it's out of country. But second, like, man, all the stuff I would want to get. Because it's like, when am I going to see these people again? Or when am I ever going to be out here again? Is kind of my mindset if I did that.
Yeah, and quite frankly, that's probably the best mindset to have, at least my personal opinion. The reason being that, I guess, if you, like, you always want to assume that you can always come back. Like, that's something you always want to assume, like, this isn't the one and only shot I'm going to get. But at the same time, you never know. It could be, you know, you never know for whatever reason. I mean, what, we had 3 years where international travel was pretty much not a thing. So it's like, I get it where you want to be like, okay, no, I want to, this might very well be my only time here and I want to get everything. But on the same time, it's like, you want to also think in the sense of, oh, well, yes, it could all go away, but I, you know what, I will try to come here again. So yeah, that's a really weird balancing act to have in your mind.
Yeah. And man, I don't know. It's very complicated. I'm already planning on going to Comic-Con in San Diego this year. So it's kind of my big trip. And then, I don't know. We'll see. The convention is in October. So we'll see what happens. Maybe I can find... I mean, our flights, cheap flights aren't even cheap though, right?
It depends on what time of year you go and where you fly. There's a bunch of life hacks on how to get cheap flights to Japan. I don't know how many of them still exist because it's one of those things where as soon as a loophole or whatever becomes known and everybody starts exploiting it, then they fill the loophole either intentionally or unintentionally. There used to be years ago, if you were willing to fly into Nagoya Airport, you could actually save a pretty penny. But yeah, I mean, you can get round trip tickets for, I guess it depends on what you mean expensive and cheap. Like you can, on the right day, and if you're traveling at the right time, you can probably get one for under $1,000, which is a lot. I'm not trying to say that it isn't, but at the same time, it's like when you think about the idea of, oh, just $1,000, I can go to the other side of the world where, you know, 100 years ago, that wasn't even really a thought unless you were going to take a massive boat ride or something. But, you know, it's all relative. It depends on what time of year you book it and how far ahead you book it, what airline, what kind of layovers, that kind of thing.
Where do you book your, how do you book your flight? Do you just Google flight it?
No, I use a site called Skyscanner to kind of get an idea of what the different airlines are charging. Then when I find an airline I want to use, I go directly to their site and book it. One nice thing about Skyscanner, and there might be better sites out there. I've been using this site for like 8 years now, so I'm kind of in my old habits. But one nice thing is if you really don't have an itinerary and you're just like, I want to go when it's the cheapest, there is an option where you can just tell it to tell you the cheapest dates.
I'm looking at flights right now. Man, the cheapest is $1,000.
Sounds about right, especially from Austin. From California, you can definitely get it cheaper because you're not paying for that extra leg. Like, you can go, you fly straight from San Francisco to Tokyo.
Yeah, it's a lot of stops. I mean, 2 stops, but, you know. Oh, man. I want to go. I don't think it's going to happen, but... I mean, logistically, $1,000 plus in the hotel, and then I'll spend a lot there, probably. So... I should just say stateside. Maybe they'll do another one next year.
Maybe. I'm surprised this is the first one. Like, that's not an unpopular show in Japan. So it's like, really? 2023, they're finally doing a conference?
Yeah, I think they do. I don't even know if, like... Does Japan has have, like, Comic-Cons, right? And things like that?
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if they have, like... They come to, like... different Comic-Cons, but this is the first, like, one geared towards just that.
Maybe that's it. Because I know, like, this aside, there are a ton of just generic, not generic, but there are a ton of different kinds of conferences in Japan, or conventions, I should say. Conference sounds way too professional, like a business conference or a tech conference or something. But there are a lot of conventions there, because you have that whole kind of otaku culture there. So it's, and a lot of the big stuff that people who go to Comic-Cons like come out of Japan. So, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of conventions for people who like anime, people who like this specific video game or whatever.
Yeah, I get, well, yeah, I don't think it's gonna work this year for me. Hopefully they do it next year. We'll see. I mean, I don't want to ever say, like, what is it? Like, in the words of Justin Bieber, never say never. I might win the lottery tomorrow, so in that case, I will go.
That's cool. Oh, yeah. I mean, one day I would highly recommend doing it one day. This year might actually be a little more expensive because I think a lot of people, since there hasn't been regular international travel for the past 3 years, I think a lot of people are just like, all right, it's time for me to go. Like, I've been waiting for 3 years to go to Japan, and so now there's just, like, a huge flow of people and supply and demand, so there are less hotel rooms available, which also raises the price of hotels. So, you know, that could definitely play into it.
Yeah, well, we'll see, but on that note, what have you been up to this past week?
Not much. So I went to Chinatown for Chinese New Year. I'm sorry, Lunar New Year. I'm so used to calling it Chinese New Year, but really Lunar New Year is a really more appropriate term, largely because there are other cultures that celebrate Lunar New Year that aren't Chinese. And so, you know, you want to use inclusive language, like, you know, Koreans with Solal and Mongolian New Year, and then Vietnamese with Tet. But that aside, I went downtown to Chinatown for Lunar New Year, and that was pretty fun, just seeing all the stuff. And I have this thing where every year I buy a little plushie from Chinatown of the whatever that animal is of the year. So year of the dog, year of the cat, whatever. So it's year of the rabbit, so I had to go downtown and find a rabbit.
Is it themed towards the Lunar New Year, or is it just like you find a rabbit plushie?
No, it's definitely themed towards it. Like there's a lot of stores in Chinatown that sell them as like, you know, gimmicky gifts during Chinese New Year or Lunar New Year. So that's always kind of my thing. I mean, I could always order it online, but it's a good way to get me out of the house. So
I will say though, like this weekend, I went to a convention with a couple friends, and there were some collectibles there that I really wanted. They weren't old. They were kind of newish stuff. The person kind of wanted a little over what I could find on Amazon. But sometimes I'm like, it's about coming here and getting something and the experience. Like, even though I know I might pay a little bit more, it's about like having a fun experience and like this item I got from this, making a memory, I guess. I feel like that's how it is with the plushies.
I kind of agree. There's definitely something I think that's missing due to all the convenience of online shopping. Now, granted, sometimes it really is just convenient, like saying, oh, I really need this thing, and it's not necessarily an emergency, like I need it in an hour. Even still, if I need it really quick, I can usually get it on maybe Instacart or something, but if it's not something that I need immediately, then I can just, you know, Amazon it or whatever, or order it online. But you know, there's something nice about just going to an actual store, kind of browsing and all that stuff. And a lot of that's just kind of missing from the online experience.
Very true. Though, I will say, I love two-day shipping. You know, I wish we could find a better way to, like, because I hear, like, Amazon workers are really overworked, and you know, I don't like that, but then I wish there was a way we could, I guess Jeff Bezos, give them more money. Maybe would that help? Better pay?
Maybe, I don't know. But yeah, I think I also don't like giving Amazon a ton of money. Not that it's just, you know, largely just because, yeah, I kind of feel like I'm taken away from Main Street, so to speak, you know, not shopping with where the stuff is, like not shopping at local stores. And then also, like, I feel like a lot of the workers, maybe not all of them, and maybe it's just my own misconception, but from what I've heard, it's like they're in the warehouses and stuff, they're worked really hard just to guarantee that we get the stuff on time, which is, you know, I get it, it's to my benefit, but at the same time, I'm like, I'm not cool with exploiting people for my benefit. So
yeah, I feel you on that.
Oh yeah, that's just kind of my own take on it all. That's not to say that I don't use Amazon. I absolutely do. But I definitely try to limit my usage and try to also shop in person when I can.
Yeah, I like to go out and get something in person if I can, but I also love instant gratification. You know, having that item already in my hands is something I enjoy.
That is a nice thing too. I mean, you can get the item that day if you go into the place, unless it's like midnight or something. But yeah, other than that, nothing too exciting this week. It was a nice relaxing weekend, and I did enjoy going to Chinatown, and would absolutely do it again. I think we have a parade this weekend, so maybe I'll check that out.
Oh, that sounds fun. Man, I haven't been to a parade in a long time. I can't even remember the last time I went to a parade.
Yeah, they tend to be pretty fun. Why don't we jump right into the King of the Hill episode? I do not have a creative segue today, so either I'm doing you all a favor or I'm not, by not having one. This episode is going to be The Redneck of Rainy Street. It's an episode from 2004, season 8, episode 21. This one I kind of really enjoy, largely because it is a Khan-centric episode, and it's just funny to watch Khan do a complete 180 from the character that we've seen on the show up to this point. So the guys are in the alley, and there's a real estate agent, and it looks like she's trying to sell or at least rent out something. Move the house that Luann used to rent out before she became a barnacle, as Dale put it, on Hank's life again by moving back into Hank's house. It's like, oh, she's wearing a lot of jewelry. And she comes up and she introduces herself as Abby Holiday of Holiday and Sands Realty. And she's like, oh, y'all are so lucky. This neighborhood is red hot and these houses have great curb appeal, especially this one. Who lives here? And Hank's like, I do. And of course, it makes him very proud. And she gives them all the cards and says, hey, if you're ever planning on selling, let me know. And so this really puts Hank on a cloud nine, if you will. You can kind of see it in his face that he's so happy to learn that his house is part of a hot neighborhood and that all of his hard work's been has been appreciated. At the Super Nuisance Phone House, the Con and Min are wearing Rice University sweatshirts. And the big reason is they're trying to make sure that they're kind of rallying Connie together, because Connie is trying to get into their summer school program. And for those of you who are not in the know, I imagine most people who are listening probably know, but just in case, Rice is a private university in Houston, and it is hands down the most prestigious university in Texas. And I believe my data could be old, but I believe it ranks in like the top 30 overall schools and universities, according to U.S. News and World Report. So that gives you context as why Rice University is so important to them. And Connie is just like, oh, it's not guaranteed that I'm going to be in there yet. I haven't even been accepted yet. But Con is like super set. It's like, oh, no, of course you're going to be, because you have perfect grades, all the right extracurricular activities and all that volunteering. Unfortunately, the next day comes by and she got a rejection letter. And Connie is like, that's all right, Dad. I'll just study for fun this summer. I never bothered applying to Rice. I don't know if I should, like, in retrospect, if I should have or not. I mean, I guess at this point in my mid-30s, it doesn't matter. And I have a pretty good career and stuff. But sometimes I always wonder about the road not traveled.
Oh, man. Private schools. Rice is a private school, right? Yeah.
Rice is a private school.
Yeah. There was, like, no private school was on my mind except for Baylor when I was applying to college. And I wasn't even... The only reason I applied to Baylor was because one of my teacher's husbands was an admissions person. And she was like, you should apply and I'll get you an interview with my husband. And I was like, okay. I did get accepted to Baylor, but oof, man, like, college is expensive, everyone. I just throwing that out there. So I didn't end up going to Baylor. UT is a very great school too. So
college is pricey, and a lot of times, like, some of them do really have great education, don't get me wrong, but a lot of the big reason that you would go to a Harvard or a Rice or whatever is brand recognition, let's be honest. And not to say that it's bad, but, like, when you go to those schools and you successfully graduate, you essentially join, like, a private club, and you get access to an alumni list of people you probably wouldn't have gotten access to otherwise. But in terms of, like, the pure education, it's really debatable as to whether or not those schools have better education than public schools or whatever. But that's neither here nor there. That's not the point. But, that's just a fun thing to think about. It might not be worth the extra money to go to one of the big schools if you think you might have the ability to build the networks on your own, which... You know, if you got a hustle in you, you might be able to do it. So,
yeah, I just my always advice is, like, you know, go to a school that has something that interests you or what you want to do for your life, and then, you know, go from there.
Yep. So we're at Rice University. Khan apparently made the drive all the way to Houston. And he's meeting with the, I guess, the admissions person of this program to see if they can force her to change her mind. And, you know, she's like, oh, we had many applicants, but, you know, we couldn't accept them all. And she's like, you know, Khan's like, well, my daughter has the best grades in school and she's really good. And she's like, look, you know, she's an overachieving Asian, but we have, you know, those are a dime a dozen. Like, what is her, like, I guess, gimmick or her catch? Like, what makes her unique? Maybe there's something you left off on the application. And Khan is upset, understandably so, because he's like, you mean my daughter works super hard and she's being punished for it? And I kind of understand what's going on there. And there is probably a deeper conversation than what we're going to be able to have on this podcast about it. But there is a little bit of misconception over that. Like, a lot of people will say, you know, there's quotas against Asians and stuff, and there's not enough data to suggest it. But I also get where Khan's coming from, because I think a lot of people have this idea that having good grades is enough to get into an elite program. And it's definitely important. But those programs are, like, very exclusive. There's only, like, let's say, I'm just throwing out a number, but let's say there's only 400 spots available, and it's a prestigious thing, and everybody wants to join, so they're getting thousands upon thousands of applications. I guarantee you a large number of them all have good grades, so you need to find other hooks to differentiate why you're going to choose this person over that person. You know, otherwise it just boils down to first come, first serve. Which, you know, might be more equitable. I don't know. But anyway, that's beside the point. But, you know, this is kind of what Khan's dealing with, is that her being a smart Asian isn't enough for her to get into the program.
I feel like, for me at least, someone who made, I wouldn't say I was like a stellar student. I wasn't making all A's. But I knew that my extracurriculars were like the thing to get me in. And I don't want to say, though, I also cheated the system, because, like, I am biracial. And so I'm half Asian, half Hispanic. And back then, there was no double bubble. You know what I mean? Like, I couldn't say, like, I was Asian and Hispanic. I would have to pick one or the other. And applying for colleges and scholarships, and I don't know if this is a bad thing or not, but I would always put Hispanic, because we all know how the system works.
There's definitely some truth to it. So it is illegal for schools to have quotas. So that's not to say that schools don't have quotas. I mean, it's illegal to speed too, but people speed all the time. So, you know, it's not to say that schools don't do that, but it is illegal for schools to say, okay, we want 20% of our students to be black or whatever. And then all of a sudden when they like reach their quota, they stop accepting students. Or if they're like, okay, we'll have 50% of our students being white. And then as soon as they hit that 50%, they stop accepting white students or whatever. That's not it. A lot of times they might have like goals to reach, but it's not a hard limit. Like they're saying, you know, over the next 5 years, we want at least 20% of our students to be Latinx, Black, Native American, whatever. But they're usually going to try to find ways to make that happen organically, more so than just putting in artificial quotas of just, you know, they see the application. Oh, this person's Black. Let's just let them in. That being said, because historically speaking, Black and Latin candidates haven't had the same advantages as other groups. In some cases, just straight up being barred from ever attending school by no other reason than their race. They will give special consideration to race, amongst other things. Like, if you're Black but you have horrible grades, it doesn't matter how Black you are or whatever, you're not getting into the school. Here, an idea that I can put out there, and it's from my hometown of San Antonio. San Antonio at the time had about 12 different school districts. I have no idea if we have new ones, if some merged with others or whatever nowadays, but this is definitely what it was. And then Alamo Heights was like the really rich school district. And then there's South San Antonio, which is a poor district, largely Latin district, whereas Alamo Heights was largely white. And of course, school districts, the way they work is your school gets funding based on property values. So places with poor houses or poorer people tend to get less funding than places with richer families. So they did a study of students, and they had these students who were enrolled in AP classes in both schools, in a South San Antonio school and an Alamo Heights school, and were taking similar extracurriculars. And then they compared like SAT and ACT scores, and they saw that the students from the poorer school did worse, despite having like all A's and everything. And that's largely just because they were at a disadvantage because of they were in a poor school. Like, it wasn't that they were lazy or dumb or whatever. They didn't have access to the same resources. So a lot of times colleges will put that into consideration when they look at a candidate and realize, you know, this person, you know, maybe they aren't hitting it, but looking at their background, I could understand why they might have this, but I also see that they have great potential, because also schools, especially prestigious schools, are trying to protect their brand. So they're not going to let people in that they think are going to be, they probably will if you bribe them or whatever, but they're not going to let people in that they think are going to make their school look horrible.
I would love to be rich enough to bribe, to have my children be, to bribe a school to have my children in there. Though I will go to jail, right? Isn't that what happened to all those?
Let's go to the next one. So Khan looks at church for Ted, and it's like, oh, Ted, I didn't see you at the Buddhist Center. And Ted's like, I'm Episcopalian now. It's just good for business. And so it's clear he joined the church because that's where the mayor and everybody he needs to meet and wine and dine is. And he Khan is just like, oh, it's sorry to hear about Chang not getting into it. And Ted's like, what are you talking about? Chang got in. And Khan's like, what? Chang is just as Asian as Connie. And well, he's, you know, essentially hinting that he's not as smart. But Ted's like, yep, but he got in. Look, just do a $10,000 donation to the school and you'll get in. So kind of in that vein that you were mentioning, bribery has happened in these prestigious colleges a lot. Like, it's not, even though we had that USC scandal a few years ago that makes it seem like it's a new problem, it happens all the time. It's just a right way and a wrong way to bribe people. And it's weird saying that because, you know, you shouldn't bribe in general. But if you look at the way he did it, where it's like, oh, I'm going to write a donation to the school so that you can build a new hall or something, like that's the quote unquote right way to bribe. And basically it's like, okay, well, we'll look at your, we'll give your application another look-see or something. That's kind of the way where you won't get in trouble for bribing. I should say it's not the right way, but it's a way where you can dodge the bullet of being in trouble. But then on the flip side, you had these people who were bribing USC and the other schools, and they were like literally just giving money directly to the coach saying, let my kid in and help us lie about their extracurriculars and stuff like that. So that's the bad way, or that's the way you're going to get in trouble.
You know what I really appreciate about this moment with Ted is that at this moment in time, Ted is treating Khan like an equal, you know, like he's not like, you can't afford this. He's like, I'm going to I will get you in touch with the people you need to get in touch to make the donation. So it's like, Ted's like, we're in the same playing field. He's not like, oh, Khan, you know, like, you wouldn't be able to do what I can do. You know what I mean? Like, it seems very sweet, though. I guess, I don't know, morally gray area.
Yeah, I guess you could say that. I mean, it is morally gray. Whether or not it's ethical is definitely up for debate. But I think there is enough plausible deniability there to where it doesn't look like a bribe, or you can cover it up easier, so to speak. Because, you know, I guarantee you there are a lot of incredibly rich families that have very mediocre kids when it comes to their grades, but you know, with the right donation or whatever, they're able to get them into the school. So in your, you have a good point, because Ted says, oh, just call my office and we'll give you the contact information for the we'll give you the contact information so that you can make your own donation. At the house, they're crunching numbers as much as they can, but despite their best efforts, they can't come up with $10,000. And Khan is noticeably upset. He's like, oh, why didn't I go and start my own business like Ted did? Why am I a middle management nobody? And which is really sad to hear. And he's also just really upset because he's like, oh, we're just going to be stuck in this middle class life forever. And we tried so hard to get our daughter ahead and get her in a good school, and she's still not able to get ahead. And yeah, I empathize with him here on this one. And then, you know, knowing that there is a solution, like they could theoretically buy their way out of the problem, but not being able to because they don't have enough money, I could see how that would also be a frustration too. Khan gets ready to go for work, and as he's driving, he drives past the guys in the alley who are drinking, which either he works at night or he works in the afternoon, or these guys go to work late, because why are they already drinking and beer in the alley? I think we've talked about that in other episodes before. But then they're like, yeah, we're an up-and-coming neighborhood. Where do you think they're going to put the Starbucks? Hey, so now that we're a hot neighborhood, what neighborhood can we look down on now? Oh, let's look down on Apple Blossom. Apple Blossom sucks. And then Hank's like, yep. So Khan's stuck in traffic, and he is clearly being whipped by his boss. Because you can hear him, like, the whole office space, which was also made by Mike Judge, the whole office space, did you turn in your TPS report kind of talk going on. And Khan realizes that he is low on gas, so he pulls into a gas station. And as he pulls in, he hits, like, one of those concrete pillars and breaks his mirror. And he's so upset. And all of a sudden, one of the guys who's filling up sees him and is like, oh, it looks like you broke a mirror. I have a friend who can hook you up. And Khan's like, oh, no, I'm member of the Silver Star service team over at the dealership, free shuttle and free New York Times. Elvin, who's the redneck standing there, is like, huh, well, that free newspaper will cost you $700 after the dealer markup. And Khan's like, okay, well, I got to take this call. And he takes a call, and it's all his boss. And he's like, yes, yes, I know I'm running late. I had a bit of car trouble, but I would like to point out I've been early for the past 500 business days. And I was like, dock my pay. Okay, very well. And Elvin's like, man, I've been in jails that give me more freedom than that. And Elvin talks about him being his own man. He does whatever he wants, whatever he damn well pleases, et cetera, et cetera. And Khan's like, man, you say damn a lot. And he's like, hell yeah, which you would think he would say, like, you're damn straight, but nope, he doesn't. He's like, I take no mess from nobody. I'm a free man. I used to work in that cage, pointing to the little, I guess, hut or whatever where the gas attendants stay. But now I do whatever I want. I'm my own man. And he rips the mirror that's hanging off of Khan's car and shows it to Khan. It's like, look at yourself. Are you rocking in the free world? And Khan's all of a sudden just kind of thinking, the phone rings from work, and then he just throws the phone into the water, and he's like, go to hell.
I like this. Man, I thought Khan didn't go into work. I thought he was a remote worker for a while. But I guess there was a time before that. Because I guess this is not... Did we already do the karaoke episode? I can't remember.
Oh, yeah, we did that a while ago.
Yeah, in that episode, Khan works from home. Remember, he was like, they just tell me to work from home, to not come in the office?
Yeah, I think that was a later episode, though. Also, the continuity gets kind of weird in the later seasons, so...
I don't know. I'm also surprised that Khan takes advice from a random stranger, redneck person at the gas station. But I do always am like, this is a moment of weakness. Like, Khan is hitting rock bottom right now.
Yeah, that's what they always say about, like, people who fall into cults, for example. It's very easy for us to sit here and be like, oh my gosh, that person was such an idiot. How did they fall for that cult or whatever? What happens is a lot of times these cults, one, they very rarely just come up to you and say, hey, we're a cult, you should join us. But they tend to prey on vulnerable people and get them involved. And then as they start getting deeper and deeper, then that's how they get stuck. So that's kind of, I think, what's going on with Khan. Yeah, he's already in this miserable state. And to hear a guy say, look, I just don't care, I live my own life, after Khan's just like, I played by the rules and I still lost. You know, I think that's what got Khan. Otherwise, yes, Khan would probably have not given him the time of day.
I do like that. Also, he's like, that mirror is going to cost you $700 more after markup or something like that. And then Khan throws his phone out. Like, do we care about money? Do we don't care about money? What is going on now?
Maybe it was his work-provided phone and he doesn't pay for it.
I would have loved if the scene was like, Khan throws the phone, and then like the scene kind of is wrapping up, and then you see Khan have to like walk over. He's like, I actually need this phone.
That would be funny. It's like, I didn't think this through.
It's just for dramatic purposes only.
Yes, it wasn't. I didn't mean for them to take it seriously. But yes, yeah, so Khan is now, I guess, living the free life. After the break, he's driving home. We see, we kind of see the bottom of the car that he's driving in. It's definitely not the car he was in before because it's a completely different color. That's the dead giveaway. But as they're driving, we see that Khan and Elvin are in an El Camino, and they pull up to the house. And they pull up to Khan's house, and the guys are out there drinking. And Hank's like, "Oh, if you're looking for the package store, it's actually over so and so." And Khan gets out of the El Camino, and Hank's like, Khan, what are you doing in El Camino? Another guy comes up called Dauber, another redneck. He with Khan's car, and apparently he's going to buy Khan's car and trade him the car for the El Camino plus some cash. So Elvin's like, look what you got for your old car. You got Primo El Camino and cash money. After Dauber and I are done breaking the car down for parts, we're going to do some celebrating on you, Mr. Moneybags. Khan comes up and he's like, I know what you're thinking. Why not an IROC or a Z car? Well, a Camino is a way of life. It can haul anything like rebar. Heck, I can hit a deer and it flips all the way. It flips over the car and gets into the back. I never have to stop. Khan grabs a beer out of the case and he's like, ah, I had you rednecks all wrong. I should spend my welfare check on beer like you do. Min yells and Khan's like, oh, Min doesn't know the drill. And Hank's like, confused. He's like, huh? Or, huh? You know? When he goes home, Min is mad that he is adopting the redneck lifestyle and his boss called 3 times today and that he's at risk of being fired. And Khan says, you know, there's a paradise out there where no one works or cares and you can just live life. Let's just give up, Min. And she's like, oh, that'd be nice. I would never have to read another Toni Morrison book and never have to write a check to NPR, but what about Connie? We can't do this to Connie. And Khan is like, no, well, this is for Connie. That way she doesn't spend her whole life playing a rigged game that she eventually loses. Will you be my redneck bride? And then Min agrees to it. This is one of the few times I feel legit sad for Khan. Because you can tell, like, he's hurting. And that's why he's behaving the way he is.
Yeah, I mean, like, Khan doesn't know what to do. Like I said before, this is rock bottom for Khan. And it's kind of one of those things where you see someone who's been, like, so sheltered their whole life, or they haven't really experienced a lot of different kind of things, and then they kind of test that water, and then, like, instead of kind of just being like, I'm going to dabble in this, they go full force. And that's how I feel Khan is right now. He's selling his car.
Yeah. Well, and sadly, this does happen to a lot of people where they just reach a breaking point. I mean, we're all human. And they just kind of reach a breaking point where they're just like, nothing matters anymore. And they just kind of give up.
Yeah, and it's just, man, it's really interesting seeing this happen to Khan, and I guess and to Min for an extent through Khan, I guess. But it's really interesting, like, seeing someone who feels like everything is well put together. He kind of knows his place. He knows kind of how his life is. But yet, you know, under the surface, we don't know. You know, I guess this is a really good, like, kind of metaphor for, like, other people. Like, I don't know. Is metaphor the right word?
I don't think it is. It's not a wrong word.
I mean, it is a word, I feel like.
I think it can work.
I guess this is like a lesson for other people in like the real world. Like, we never know what's underneath it all. Khan was so wound up, and then the one thing of Connie not getting into school, into Rice's program, really like kind of pushed him over. So you never know what's gonna, yeah, you know. It's good to just let off some steam every now and then, I guess, is what I'm saying. Or you'll end up selling your car
for next to nothing. Yeah. But let's see what happens next. We get, like, kind of this redneck montage where it kind of shows the life that Min and Khan and Connie are starting to have, and I guess it takes place over a week or two because of some details we get later in the episode. But yeah, so they're just being a redneck. They're riding ATVs in the mud, and they've definitely changed their entire look too. Khan's hair is getting longer, and he's kind of growing a wispy mustache. And then Min's wearing a tube top, and she's wearing a ponytail. We start to see as time progresses, their lawn gets more and more overgrown and more junk shows up on their lawn, like a refrigerator and just a old push mower. They start shooting squirrels. The postman comes by, leaves mail on their doorstep. But we also see that there's like a bunch of mail stacking up, and a lot of them are late notices for bills. They're at concerts while Connie's trying to study. Starting to see that the real estate agent's trying to sell the house that's next to them, but people get a good look at Khan in their house and decide they don't want to live in that neighborhood. Khan's playing with Dauber and Elvin, and Khan leaves the lawn, and they kind of stop and they reveal that they have ankle monitors on. During dinner at the Hill House, Hank's like, go figure. He's been pushing Connie all these years, and he's the one who broke. And, you know, Peggy's like, yeah, and he's grown this weird wispy mustache. And Luann's like, I like his car. It's like a truck. And they have a laundry machine in the front yard for stray dogs that have puppies. So, yeah, we're seeing a completely different side of Khan. Somebody who would ordinarily insult rednecks is now, like, completely embracing the lifestyle. And what's funny is, like, I would say this is more redneck than even Hank and Bill and the guys and whatnot. Because, you know, Hank and Bill, yeah, they might not be the most sophisticated people on the planet. Hank, Bill, Boomhauer, Dale, or anything like that. But, you know, Hank still works. He holds down a job. He's very respectful. He takes care of things and whatnot. So he's still responsible. These guys are just like super low class, like just the type of people you would not expect to see Khan ever want to hang out with.
Yeah, it is. Like, again, like, I feel like I'm broke up, but yeah, Khan has lost it. He's jumped into the deep end. Maybe this is what he... I always feel like this should change his definition of, like, what a hillbilly is, because he calls Hank that all the time. Because now he's kind of really experiencing it. But, I don't know, he never changes his tune.
Yeah, again, I think he's just reached a breaking point where he stopped caring, and this is how it manifests. The next day, Elvin shows up, and he says he's going catfisting, which I think the actual proper term for it is noodling. They essentially go into, I guess, knee-deep water, and they put stink bait on their arms. Like, they just dip their arms into a bucket of stink bait up to maybe their elbows, they make a fist and put it in the water. And then once they feel like that a catfish has bitten onto their hand to eat, they pull their hand up and that's how they catch them. And it is, there is an actual way to do it, or that's an actual thing people will do. But I think like the proper term is noodling, but I could be wrong. And it's also pretty dangerous. Like there are people who've drowned doing it, but yeah, it's kind of fun seeing Khan doing it this way.
I've always wanted to do, like, maybe it's this episode that made me want to, but I've always wanted to do this. I've seen it on TV. Though I do hear, I'm not a big fish eater or seafood eater, so I don't think I've had catfish. Maybe I had catfish, I don't know for sure. I definitely have not taken one apart in my life, but I hear they have teeth or something like that, like something sharp that can cut your hand when you do that.
They are bottom feeders and it tastes like it. There are definitely people who like it and more power to them, but catfish is not something I enjoy.
Oh, catfish do have teeth. That's what it is. Like, so when you do it, they do bite down on you, I guess. But it always seemed interesting. Like, I've always wanted to do it. I still want to do it. But Jason, you want to do it? We can do it together.
I'll pass. I'm not a big fan of catfish anyway.
We catch and release.
Okay, maybe then.
Okay, cool.
At school the next day, Connie is talking to Bobby and saying, oh, I had to stop playing my concerto yesterday because my dad wanted me to play The Devil Went Down to Georgia. And Bobby doesn't see the downside. He's like, oh, this sounds great. Like, you can eat nothing but fried food. You have no studying. The TV is always on. And Connie doesn't like this at all. She's like, but, you know, Dad's going back to the office, so I think things are going to get better. Well, it turns out Dad went to the office to go dumpster diving, and he found a filing cabinet, and he's keeping it. And it's like, oh, look, Connie, I found this filing cabinet. And all of a sudden, Dooley's like, your dad is white trash.
You can always count on Dooley to say, just to like, to tell you the truth, the honest truth. And I respect him for that. So we all need a Dooley in our lives.
Yep. The realtor, Abby, she says that she can't move the house anymore because of the pigsty next door. So she had to like take $15,000 off the cost of the house. The next night, Hank and Peggy are sleeping and a lot of noise going on next door. And he's like, I like Freebird as much as the next guy, but too much is too much. And Peggy's like, Abby Holiday said that Khan is making this the next Belcher's Grove, which is kind of the, I guess, redneck poor area of Arlen. Hank's like, well, that's it. I didn't allow novelty mailboxes in the neighborhood for this to happen. So he gets dressed and he heads over to Khan's, and the grass is overgrown, and he winds up banging his knee against an old toilet in the yard. And Khan's pit bull, or I guess it's a pit bull, I can't tell from the way it's drawn, tries to attack Hank, but doesn't have enough leash. And Elvin comes out, and Khan, this guy's trying to steal your stuff. And it's like, no, I'm not. I'm here to talk to you. And it's like, it looks like you're looking for a fight. And then Peggy shows up and threatens Elvin, and he's like, oh, you're hiding behind mommy's skirt. And Hank's like, no, because I was just getting ready to threaten you anyway. And then eventually, I guess Elvin's like, oh, this isn't worth it. And they all decide to bounce a drink. And Hank's like, Min, talk some sense into Khan, but Min's just not having it. They try to invite Connie to come, and she's like, no, I'm just going to stay home. And they're like, well, you're not staying by yourself. You're going to stay with the Hills. And Peggy's like, oh, we're going to have a nice sleepover. And Peggy's a little worried and asking Hank, you know, what's going to happen. It's like, oh, they're too arrogant to live like this for long. All of a sudden, the realtor pulls up and she's like, hey, I think I have some good news to our problem. I just heard from the bank that they are starting the foreclosure procedures on the house. It's like, what? It's like, they're only 1 month behind, but for letting their house go to this, the bank has not given them any leniency. With any luck, they'll be out within 10 working days. So yeah, I mean, they're getting ready to lose their house, like, for real.
Is there an HOA in on their street? Or is it just Hank? Or is Hank in charge of it?
They never call it an HOA, but they definitely seem to have an HOA-like thing. Because in one of the episodes, Hank talks about how there's a block charter. So like it's like the rules that everybody who lives on the block agrees to. So that, I mean, they don't call it an HOA, but that sounds like an HOA. And Hank is the leader of the HOA. So I feel like it's a very informal HOA. There's probably no dues or anything, but there's just general agreed to rules on living on this block.
See, if I lived on the block, I would be, I don't know how I feel. Hank does really care about the neighborhood, like the street. So he does want it to look really nice. But Hank's one vote is basically four votes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm very conflicted, but I think it depends on the novelty mailbox, right? What if it's really like a good one?
That is just Hank's personality. He does not like, he doesn't like fun.
I know I miss having a mailbox. I feel like that's what I miss, I guess. You know, I have to go all the way and like to the like commutative box and like open it. I miss just it being on my street in front of my house. I miss the old times. So I wouldn't mind it if someone wanted a novelty one.
Yeah, fair enough. So after the break, everybody's hanging out at Elvin's and he's like, oh, I hated that neighbor of yours. You should feed his dog bad meat. Maybe you should get a place in Belcher's Grove where there's some good people. Min is hanging out with, I guess, Elvin's girlfriend or wife or whatever. And she's like, come on in. Elvin caught a bunch of squirrels and we're going to debone them. And Min's like, okay. Then we see Lucky, who's going to be a character later that will follow a lot. I think this is actually the first episode we see him. And he's like, Lucky, so why is that your name? He's like, he tells a long story about how he goes into Costco and he has to use the bathroom. And he essentially slips on pee and he breaks two vertebrae. And he's like, I'm in constant pain, but I got a $53,000 settlement. And Elvin's like, and that's why we call him Lucky. This guy never has to work a day in his life again. Then they're like, oh, hey, did you hear the new Trace Adkins album came out? It's like, oh, let's go get it. Oh, it's after midnight. The store's not open. It's like, hell, I can get into it. And they're like, they're going to break into it. It's like, okay, they all drive down to the store and like, okay, who's going to do it? And Khan's like, me. And he reaches down for like a broken piece of sidewalk. And Min's like, I draw the line at this. I ate a squirrel quesadilla, but this is too much. Do not throw. And so Khan backs down, puts the brick down, and Elvin's like, well, hell, I'll do it. So he picks up the brick and breaks the window. Alarms go off. He runs in and Min's like, that's it. I'm leaving. Elvin comes back with CDs. They're at the lake listening to the album. And Elvin's like, you know, the way your lady didn't stand by you, she made a damn fool of you. And things escalate and Khan and Elvin fight. But Khan winds up winning because he has, like, I guess, really good, you know, karate moves or martial arts moves. And Elvin's not really mad at it. He's like, man, you're a good fighter. We need to take you sticking. And he's like, okay, cool. So yeah, it's fine. It's nice to see that Min did have a breaking point where like, okay, this is beyond the limit. We're not criminals.
My breaking point would have been the deboning of the squirrel, personally.
Yeah. I've never eaten squirrel, but I can't imagine that it tastes good. I also, like, I hate eating quail because I feel like it's a lot of work for not a lot of meat. I feel like squirrels would be very similar.
I feel the same. I've never had squirrel before. I don't know. It just feels like it's going to be tough. Tough meat. Squirrels always seem so tense. You know, those muscles are not relaxed. I feel like it wouldn't be that good. I do remember one time my cousin, when I was like growing up, he said that he shot a squirrel and they ate it. So next time I see him, I might ask. But for me, at least, the squirrel deboning would have been the breaking point. And I'm surprised Khan was like willing to throw the brick. He's very deep into this now.
Oh, yeah, and that's the problem. It's like he's just given up, so he's just willing to do whatever. Which, again, makes me feel sad because he's not a bad person. He's just broken.
Also, Khan is a great fight. Like, well, I don't know how like hard it is to beat up Elvin, but Khan was really good at defending himself.
He was. He did do a well job defending himself. Granted, I don't know. Again, Elvin's probably just a brute. That's my impression. Like, he probably doesn't know how to fight properly. He just uses his size and his weight and throws it about and wins, whereas Khan actually had technique. Min returns home, and since she's alone, Peggy's like, okay, Hank, go talk to her. And it's like, all right, well, you give Connie a math problem to distract her. And Hank goes in and pretty bluntly says, yeah, you're about to lose your house. And she's like, what? It's like, yeah, the mortgage company is starting a foreclosure. And that's kind of snaps Min out of it. And they flip the power switch and realize that they lost electricity that's been cut off. And they're feeling bad for Connie, and Min's like, oh, we need to get back together and get our lives back together. And Hank is like, well, I'm going to go find Khan. You start paying bills. As Hank gets into the car, his cell phone rings, and it's Mr. Strickland. He's like, hey, I'm going to bet on this little Asian. He looks like he has real ninja skills, but can he take a board to the face? And Hank's like, what? He's like, I'm here at the sticking competition behind the lumberyard. And, you know, he's third up to go play. And I'm wanting to know who to put a bet on. He's going to be going up against this simple gorilla man. Hank realizes what's going on. And he's like, oh, no. So he drives all the way over there. We see like a sticking contest going on. And they essentially knock each other out by hitting each other in the head, the two guys. But one, like, moves his finger a little in bit, which suggests he's somewhat conscious, and so he's declared the winner. It's Khan's turn next, and he goes up to fight, I guess, a giant simpleton. Hank takes the board from him and joins the fight. And he's like, I'm here to talk some sense into you. I'm not here to fight. And then Khan's like, or not Khan. Mr. Strickland's in the stands. He's like, oh, beat some sense into him. I put money on the simpleton. And Hank's trying to talk to Khan and also block his swings. And it's like, you're about to throw everything you've worked for away. And Khan's like, well, I've lost everything. And Hank is like, well, do you want Connie growing up in an El Camino? Because that's what's going to happen. He's like, what choice do I have? I worked hard. I did everything right. And then all of a sudden I was told it's not good enough. And Hank's like, you got a bum deal, but maybe you could take a lesson from Connie. Connie never stopped trying. Even after you and Min went off the deep end, you couldn't drag her down. And Khan kind of has an aha moment. It's like, oh, that's her hook. And he kind of comes to his senses and is like, oh, thanks, Hank, for coming to your senses. And everybody is now mad because the fight's not taking place. So they have to run away.
Of course, Buck is there. You know, like, I don't know. I was kind of surprised when I was watching the episode that, oh, why is Buck there? But, like, it makes such sense that, of course, Buck is here. And, of course, he's betting.
Yeah, he does a lot of betting. I mean, we've seen other episodes where he bets on dog races and, you know, he bets on card games and everything. So, betting on this does not seem out of character for him. I think this is definitely Khan going off the deep end. Because now he just doesn't even care about his own well-being, it looks like. Like, he's just, oh, I'm going to go ahead and get my brains beaten out by this pillar or whatever.
Do you think, I feel like Khan could have taken him, right?
I think it's more, like, I think that guy could have probably taken a few hits before going down. I don't think Khan could have taken a few hits before going down.
I also like this whole end part because of Hank coming in. And you, I like how we've been saying it, like, Khan's fully gone. He's gone into this. But when you hear Hank talk to him, Khan's like, I know what I'm doing. I know all this is, like, out of character, or all this is weird, or, like, this isn't who I am. But, like, what else do I have? Do you know what I mean? Like, he's not fully brainwashed into this different lifestyle. He knows what he's doing. He's just like, there's nothing else to do. You know, there's nothing else I can do. It's just this.
Yes, exactly. He's gotten to this point where he's just given up.
Does this make it worse, though? That he's, like, consciously doing all this instead of kind of just being, like, mind slushed into all, like, you know, he's not, like, he just dived in, he kind of forgotten everything. This is, like, I know what I'm doing kind of thing. Like, I'm actively neglecting all my responsibilities.
Well, I also think he's not an idiot. I think he's well aware of the fact that he's been ignoring his responsibilities, and I think that's the purpose. Like, he knows, I guess he's reached a point where he feels like no matter how hard he works, he won't be good enough. You know, I think there was a few moments there that made him realize that. Like, one, Connie not getting in, and even though she's a hard worker, she's still not able to get in. And then, of course, the knowing that Chang not being as smart as Connie, but him getting in because his dad did a $10,000 donation. And we have that moment where Con mentions, like, oh, there's no use. We're never going to be able to come up with $10,000. I wish I started my own business and not live my whole life in middle management. So Con kind of has this realization, or this belief, rather, that he's just never going to be good enough. And that's why he's reacting the way he is. And so he's just like, you know, if I'm never going to be good enough, why bother trying?
I would have loved this episode. Well, I still love this episode. But it would have been so much more interesting. I got to rewind all that. I love this episode. It would have been really cool if at the end of at this point, Con was like, I was actually doing this for Connie. Like, this is her story. Like, he planned all of this. That would have been insane. That's like end of Fight Club shocking twists.
Oh, yeah. He does have kind of that realization after Hank says something that, oh, everything Khan's done might actually be to her advantage because now she has a hook in her story. But it doesn't sound like that was necessarily for her benefit. Like, he realizes after the fact that it is.
Yeah, it's just a very nice coincidence.
In fact, we see, like, the episode ends with them at Stanford, and Connie's trying out for that school program or summer program, and the admissions person's like, you know, the admissions has already passed. And it's like, yeah, I'm sorry that I couldn't get the deadline, but, you know, we almost got kicked out of our house, and my parents don't work, and my dad abandoned us for a little bit, and he nearly got killed by a 2x4. In fact, that's him out there, and you see him, like, pouring gasoline into, like, the engine of the El Camino, and the guy's like, oh, dear, welcome to the Stanford program. So, in a way, it kind of worked out, maybe not in the best way. Like, I'm sure there was better ways that it could have worked out other than that. Like, Khan's going to have to get a new job. There's no way he still has his job at this point in time.
Maybe that's when he starts working from home, this new job.
Maybe. Because there's no way he's, like, unless maybe he just had a lot of vacation days and he didn't fully adapt. I don't know if that's the word I want to use, but he didn't fully, like, commit to the redneck lifestyle and he just took a lot of PTO. Maybe then that's fine. But otherwise, he doesn't have a job.
Yeah, you can't, I mean, for your power to go out, you have to, like, have, it has to be a little bit ways over the, like, bill deadline.
Yeah, it's not like if you miss it by a week, they shut off your power. Like, time has to pass.
Yeah, for that, though, you know, Khan seems responsible. I mean, this whole episode's about Khan not being responsible, but he seems responsible enough that he would have, like, a little nest egg to get them through, to catch them back up while he, like, finds something new.
Doubt they'd have much because this whole episode, like, I wouldn't say starts, but a big point in this episode is that they don't even have $10,000.
Well, $10,000 is a lot for, like, I wonder if they're, like, $10,000 extra dollars. Like, where can we pull this out of? Well, no, I don't know. If they had a nest egg, though, they would have used it.
Yeah, because I guarantee if they have, like, $10,000 in savings, even if it was for emergencies or whatever, if that's the way Khan and Min are, if spending that $10,000 was the way to get Connie into the school, they would absolutely just blow it and say, you know, we'll make it back. Or when Connie becomes rich one day, we'll be able to take care of it.
Mm. Well, in my mind, they have enough to get them through a couple months.
Fair. Yeah, I'm glad. I mean, I'm glad that it kind of worked out in the end. Like, I'm a sucker for a happy ending. But I'm still, like, on the fence about how it worked out and how I feel about how it worked out. Because, I don't know. Overall, it was a pretty good episode, though. And it's still one of my favorites because I do like seeing Khan kind of do the complete 180. Like, he goes from... And it's not as simple as, oh, let's just make Khan a redneck this episode. But, like, there's layers to it. Like, he just feels like giving up because it's like, what's the point in doing everything? And I think a lot of people get that kind of nihilism in their life at least once, where they're just like, what's the point of everything?
Yeah, I like this a lot. You know, seeing Khan struggle is always good. Not like I enjoy it, his demise, but kind of seeing Khan have to work through stuff and grow a little bit is always nice. I mean, isn't this the introduction of Lucky?
Yeah, I believe this is the first episode we ever see Lucky.
So, I would say Lucky is one of my favorite characters, but I do enjoy having him around.
So, I personally don't mind Lucky. I'm not a big fan of him, but I don't mind him either. I know, like, Mark, who's been on our podcast, absolutely hated Lucky as a character.
Oh, I just love Lucky-isms. I don't know. There was an episode where they're waiting for concert tickets. Like, Lucky's trying to wait for concert tickets, and Luann and Bobby wait with them. And then, just like, Bobby's like, I gotta go to school. And Bobby's like, or Lucky's like, education comes first. Or so, he says it in the Lucky way, that like, you don't have to wait in line, you gotta get your schooling. And it's just like, oh, it's like this weird, I don't know, Confucianism kind of like sayings and things like, it's like Lucky's wisdom is bestowed upon us. He's got these great nuggets here and there.
He does. I think he did, in a way, he did feel a bit unnecessary for the show. But, I mean, there are positives to him.
I will say, though, the downside of Lucky is he hurts Luann's character development. Like, we lose everything. Like, Luann's growth is basically, like, shot back because Lucky came into the picture.
Mm-hmm. Well, because he's, I guess Hank doesn't dislike Lucky, and there's probably going to be plenty of episodes coming up. Well, we're almost to the end of the podcast, but I think we have at least two episodes in the list that are very Lucky-centric. So we will, or at least have feature Lucky heavily. So actually, next week is the episode is a Lucky-heavy episode. Luann gets Lucky. But yeah, there's a few. And it's in those episodes, it definitely seems like Hank doesn't dislike Lucky, because Lucky at a lot of times winds up coming to the right conclusion, if that makes any sense. Like, Lucky in the end, even if they disagree, he comes around to doing the right thing.
Yeah, that is true, but I guess we'll talk more about Lucky next week.
Yep, next week is Luann Gets Lucky. Do you have anything else on this one?
I wouldn't say this is one of my favorite episodes. It's definitely a good watch. What I like about this episode is that Hank gets an ego boost from the realtor. I love seeing Khan in like a different light. Not just Khan and Min. It's like an Elseworld for you DC fans. Or like a different multiverse version of Khan and Min. It's like, what if this happened? And it just kind of shows you again how like great of a kid Connie is. Kind of how she's always seeing the upside to all these things. Those are what I liked about the episode.
Yeah, that's a lot of good stuff, and we'll be talking more about Lucky next time, and Luann Gets Lucky. So until then, I am Jason.
And I'm Jimmy.
Bye.
Bye.